As I said, I'm so glad to be here with you today and that you were willing to host this service. There's been so much grief, so much unnecessary loss. And seeing everybody here today is good for my heart. I was 20 on the day of Kachi's funeral. It was in a large church in Ohio. The sky was December gray, and the sanctuary was full. His parents sat in the front of the church, his friends in the back. He was 22. A year before that, he had asked me to marry him, but I wanted to finish college first, so I told him no. He died a year later after overdosing on heroin and crack at the local Motel 6. We sat quiet and still in that church, cold, a bit emptier inside. And so the pastor's words had room to echo through us when he softly lamented just how easily Kachi could have avoided going to hell. It echoed through us when he condemned us to the same fate. He told us that only the altar could save us, but we knew better. See, we'd been saving each other for years. Maybe our families kicked us out, or our schools, our churches, but we remained. We loved each other through rehab, relapse, poverty, death. We knew better. And what the pastor did that day, it was not the work of the gospel. Shame can never be the work of the gospel, because it is death-dealing and not life-giving. Our dignity and our divinity, they're related. You can't wound one without harming the other. Easter is my favorite holiday. And before going to seminary, I thought Easter was just a day. But it's actually a season. It stretches from Easter Sunday to Pentecost, because Easter is meant to be a new way of living. I love it because it reminds us to honor and celebrate the simple and profound ways that people resurrect their lives every day. People change. They come back from the brink. They strive to bring their communities back to life. Every day, people defy the destructive forces of the world by choosing dignity, grace, and connection. It's worthy of our celebration. And I think it's what that pastor forgot that day, what too many of us have forgotten, that Christians are called to be an Easter people, a resurrection people. When I think of resurrection, I think of my friend Dave. After Kachi died, he came to live with me up at school. He was trying to quit heroin, and he needed a change of scenery. He slept on my floor, and I remember coming home to him every day after class, and he would be laying in the same spot, listening to the same Johnny Cash album over and over again. For Dave, those were hymns of survival. After a few months, he felt more confident, and he decided to move back home. And over the next year, I finished school, and after graduation, I moved home too. I called him the day I got back, and we made some plans, but he never showed up. I didn't worry much. He had a tendency to flake. But a week went by, and he still wasn't returning my calls. And right when I started to worry, Dave called and asked if I wanted to go for a drive. In Ohio, that's what we do for fun. We drive. Through the woods, near farms, just anywhere, just away. We were in the car for an hour or so that day when he apologized for standing me up. Then he got sort of quiet and gazed out the window and told me that he had overdosed that day. He died. He decided to use one more time, and because his tolerance was low, it killed him. Luckily, his mom came home unexpectedly and found him unconscious and called the paramedics, and they were able to revive him with naloxone. But he'd been dead, and now he's alive. Real life resurrection. He owns his own business now, and he's married to an incredible woman, and they have a daughter. Her name is Grace. But that wasn't the day I learned about naloxone. In fact, neither of us knew what he'd been given. Nobody ever told us. We didn't understand how his life had been saved, only that it had been. And we thought that only the paramedics could do that. It wasn't until about 8 years later, when I began working at the Harm Reduction Coalition, that I'd even heard about naloxone. And it was way too many deaths later. Naloxone, which is sometimes called Narcan, is a medication that blocks the effects of opiates like Vicodin, Oxycontin, heroin, and fentanyl. Its ability to block opiates in the brain means that it can be used to stop or reverse an opiate overdose. It saves lives. It's easy to use, low risk, and comes in three forms. You can get it either as an injection, a nasal spray, and most recently, an auto-injector, which has a voice recording that walks you through all of the necessary steps. But even among a media frenzy about a new opiate overdose crisis, one that is not new to communities of color or those living on the streets, many people still don't know that naloxone exists or how to use it. In fact, I invite you to pay attention to news articles and segments about opiate overdose. And if they do not also include information about naloxone, I encourage you to contact the reporter and ask for an amendment to be made. It's unacceptable to keep reporting on this unnecessary loss of life without also informing people about how these lives can be saved. In 2016, over 4,000 people died in Ohio. That's where I'm from. And they surpassed that number last year. Many of those deaths were preventable, but people were not given the tools that they need to survive. For example, San Francisco, a city with a well-oiled naloxone distribution program, has one of the lowest overdose death rates in the country. That's not an accident. In fact, last year, 1,247 community-dispensed overdose reversals took place. Community dispense means that they weren't a police officer or a paramedic or a trained professional. They saved 1,247 lives. Harm reduction, one of many approaches to drug use, has sometimes been controversial. But it shouldn't be. Certainly not in churches. Harm reduction is described as a set of practical strategies aimed at reducing negative consequences associated with drug use. For example, giving people access to naloxone reduces the risk of death by overdose. Harm reduction uses a spectrum of strategies from safer use to managed use to abstinence in order to meet people where they're at. It's a movement for social justice built on respect on the respect for people who use drugs, and respect for their rights, including their right to live. Simply put, it's meeting people where they're at and supporting people in keeping themselves as safe, healthy, and connected as possible without the condition of their sobriety. Theologically put, it's the unconditional love of God, the love of neighbor, the work of the gospel. I worked at the Harm Reduction Coalition almost all of my time in seminary. In some ways, they were strange worlds to try to marry. But as time went on, I came to see them as connected. I went to seminary to learn how to bury my dead with dignity. And it is harm reduction that taught me that resurrection was possible. Across the country, those doing overdose prevention work like Scoop have handed out countless doses of naloxone. Collectively, they've helped save thousands of lives. But those lives were not saved by professionals or paramedics or even police. They were saved by drug users. The vast majority of overdose reversals are completed by people who use drugs. And so it's drug users and their loved ones that need to have access to naloxone. This is something many states have begun to recognize by making naloxone available at some pharmacies without prescription and enacting Good Samaritan laws that offers limited immunity to those who respond to an overdose. But there's more to be done. As a church, we must recognize our role in ending this crisis. Drug users have been doing the gospel work that the church has been avoiding. They've been preaching resurrection, and we're missing it. Worse than that, often we're making it harder. We make it harder when we attach shame, stigma, and yes, sin to issues of drug use and addiction. We make it harder when we suggest that connection to God requires our purity. We make it harder when we treat people who use drugs like the other instead of like a child of God, whether they are living on the street or sitting in the pew beside us. We make it harder when we allow people to use words like junkie without objection, because we know that God doesn't make junk. The gospel reading today reminds us that as Christians, we're charged to raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons. What if that's not a metaphor? What if the demon isn't what we think it is? What if the demon is shame? Perhaps the gospel is asking us to cast out shame and stigma from our places of worship, from our hearts, from our loved ones. Perhaps the gospel is asking us to see how too often it's us that turn drug users into lepers. It's possible to be people of resurrection. Naloxone is just one of many tools that helps us to raise the dead in body and in spirit. It begins with recognizing that every life is worth saving. Every life is valuable, whether they get sober and start a business or they continue to use. Every life is beloved by God, even if it's messy. After all, Scripture teaches us that, like Mary Magdalene, when you sit in the mess, when you do not leave someone to die alone on their cross, when instead you sit at the foot of it and are willing to accompany them to the tomb, then you are there to be first witness to resurrection. It's not easy. It's far from simple. And not everyone lives. Sometimes the tomb stays sealed, and always there is grief. Grief does not only come when a life is lost. So many of us carry the invisible weight of grief with us everywhere we go. We've lost someone we loved, or a relationship, or our plan for the future. And I wonder if some of the hostility that is sometimes directed at drug users is actually just a distortion of our grief, an attempt to protect ourselves from being hurt again. We harden so we do not feel the hurt of disappointment or anger or fear. We harden so that it hurts a little less when we see people we love struggling with something we have no control over. It's a form of armor that I know well, but I'm not sure that it's working. There's still so much hurt. It just goes untended for drug users, for their loved ones, for our communities. We deserve better. We deserve to grieve. And drug users deserve love, respect, and dignity. Drug users deserve the chance to live, even if their choices grieve us. For me, today, Resurrection is getting to speak Kachi's name, Eric Kachi, in this place, from this pulpit, with my voice, knowing that there is no threat of hell. Knowing instead that people are gathered here to learn a skill that could have saved his life. Meaning that somewhere, here, there is a group of people gathered who knows that his life was worth saving, that he was beloved by God, no matter what, and that we all are. 12 years have passed since his funeral, and many of the people who sat beside me that day have also died. They lost their lives to overdose or suicide. Like I said, shame, it is death dealing. Last summer, I got a chance to travel to New York, where a group of clergy and harm reductionists gathered to discuss the role of communities of faith in addressing the opioid overdose crisis. Marilyn Reyes, a harm reduction leader, activist, and former drug user, reminded us that words can be death or life. We must speak life into people, she said. More than that, we can and must be agents of resurrection. We can help to bring our communities back to life. We can share the good news that naloxone exists. We can be ready to use it. We can treat people who use drugs like they are part of our beloved community because they already are. We are not saved at the altar alone. It takes a kingdom. It takes a willingness. The power of resurrection is in this room today, because it lives within us, in our hearts, and in our hands. We need only choose it. We need only claim our legacy as an Easter people in this Good Friday world. Amen.